everybody, to a new episode of Humming Fools. I am one of your hosts, Kyle Stuck, and I am joined by my baguette-loving friend, Noah.
What's going on?
Noah, I'll tell you what's going on. We have Sweet 25 in our quotation mark studio with us tonight, and I am so pumped. Thatcher, starting with you, can you introduce yourself? Tell us what instrument you play and a song that people should be listening to that they're not.
Okay.
Lots of pressure right off the bat.
Can I start with a question and then do the... Can I do that?
Okay, I'm going to allow it.
Do you want me to say my name again?
Jesus answered the questions. I'll just
say it again.
Okay, I'm Thatcher, lead singer of Sweet 25, and I play the guitar and I sing.
Oof.
And it's a good combo. And does it have to be one of my songs?
Or can it
be
just any song? Oh, yeah, any song.
I'm going to tell you, today...
Better not take my song.
It's now. There's no way.
Okay.
I actually want to cover this song.
Okay.
So I'm going to tell the guys now. It's a new one. Good night. Phone's being slow. It's okay. It's by... I'm forgetting the guy's name. This is really sad.
Yeah. I don't think it's your fault. I feel like it's my fault. I shouldn't have done this.
I feel like with all this new technology, we don't remember anything. Oh, let me look it up. I just had to look at the movie clip.
Yeah.
You know, it's... Okay. Gradual Things by Johnny P.
Mm.
Super R&B, groovy. That's what I've been jamming on today. Good rainy vibe.
Fantastic.
So.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Luke, your turn. And you have to say your name again, even though I just said it.
Right.
It's missing half of it, so...
Exactly. Yeah, my name is Luke Hogan. I play the electric bass and sing, and... My song that I've listened to a lot is The Dude by Quincy Jones.
I knew it.
Yeah, the production is really incredible, and just all the instrumental voices and all the vocals. There's a lot of variety in terms of who's singing and what parts they're singing and that kind of thing. So yeah, it's really, really cool track.
I guess that's the advantage of the artist also being a producer.
Exactly.
This is going to sound really good.
right. So, yeah.
Nice, and to your right, we have Daniel Funk. I said your whole name this time because I can't resist it. It's just a great name.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes while I'm falling asleep, I find myself saying it in a platonic way, unless you don't want it to be.
No, then you should stay.
I would be surprised if you're the only one. Wow.
All right.
Vain Daniel Funk. Anyway. Daniel, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Let's start up strong.
He's blushing.
I play drums in Sweet 25. What else? My name's Daniel Funk.
Daniel Funk, and what's the song?
Let's say it again. It's Daniel Funk.
Daniel Funk.
It's like my name's Daniel Funk. I play Daniel Funk. I'm in the band Daniel Funk.
Daniel Funk.
Yeah.
And it's like, if I had that as a dream, that'd be a nightmare.
This is how.
Say it's Daniel Funk.
I would say this. I'll just be upfront with you guys. I listen to way more Spanish pop than I probably should.
So my
song is going to be a song by an artist called Alvaro Soler, one of the Spanish pop artists that I listen to. I would say the song Ella. A song you should listen to.
Oh, I know. It's a
Ella.
That's it.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say Despacito, and I was going to jump across this table and slap the crap out of you.
Justin Bieber version.
That's just understood that you should be listening to that song.
Yeah. That's just a comment.
No.
Okay.
I mean, Daniel.
If you haven't gotten down to that song in the past year, I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, Daniel does listen to you. I never talked to him about it, but when you get in the shower, I can hear outside, it's like totally... music that I would not listen to.
That's a nice way of saying it.
And it's good. And, you know, it's like we all do our own thing.
It's how I de-stress. It's my, like,
sure,
you know, detox at the end of the day. It's, yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit of Spanish music.
And I like it.
You don't need to make excuses for yourself. I mean, that's, yeah.
Well, he does.
I appreciate it.
I know we're in America in 2018, but you can listen to other cultures, other types of music. It's fine.
Yeah.
Hey, by, what was the name again?
The Outcast.
Alberto Soler.
Oh.
By Outkast.
Does Aya shake it like a Polaroid picture?
I mean, I would imagine so.
Oh.
Yeah.
That is nuts. Yeah, I've heard that song in some time.
It's excellent.
Dude.
One of the all-time great songs. Yeah.
I mean, Andre 3000, just to be clear, is one of my favorite rappers.
Top five. Ever.
Easy.
Yeah.
Smooth. Like Snoop Dogg, nobody's smoother than Snoop Dogg.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's as direct as Eminem.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's as clean as Andre 3000. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just me.
This guy gets it.
It's been said tonight, folks.
This guy gets
it. I'm telling you, man.
Yes.
It was first time I heard, what is it? I'm sorry, Miss Jackson, right?
Yeah, Miss Jackson. Whew. A great song.
It changed him.
I've heard people say the reason he doesn't have his own album is because, like, the expectations are too high.
That he's just like, guys, I'm really not that good.
Yeah. like there's,
do it!
Yeah.
I'm waiting for it, man.
Yeah, people are just expecting it to be the best album ever made. So it's
That's cool. Yeah, anything touched is pure gold.
Yep.
Well, guys, speaking of the best album ever made, could you give our listeners a little bit of a description, a taste of what Sweet 25 is, and then we can move on to that best album that we're referencing beyond what was just referenced. Stay with me, folks.
Luke, why don't you start this? I usually go first.
So about the album specifically?
Or no, tell us first about Sweet 25.
Yeah. So I guess we met each other fall of 2014. I was the resident assistant of Sweet 25 in the J. Alvin All Men's Dorm.
Oh.
Yeah. So I...
Do more.
No, but I was in the suite, you know, had put up posters on everyone's doors, and... there was a guy named Milton Radler who was going to be...
That's a made-up name.
No, it's very real. So I was like, man, Milton Radler, I bet he's a freaking nerd. I was like, I'm going to be really nice to this guy, but he is probably pretty weird.
He probably sucks.
But anyway, I have Lionel Richie up as the poster with Milton's name underneath.
Yeah, because he put musicians and everybody else.
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
everybody had a theme, and you did musicians.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so Thatch comes in, and I'm like, "Are you Milton?" He's like, actually, it's Thatch."
quick shutdown.
but then he saw Lionel Richie. He's like, "Oh my gosh, I love Lionel Richie." And I was like, "Dude, same." And so we started immediately bonding over that as our first conversation, and then. That same day, Daniel moves in down the hall, and his name is Funk.
Daniel Funk.
What did you put on his?
I can't remember.
I can't either.
I remember yours was Sting.
That's right.
Yeah, it was on your door. Like a young Sting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't even remember who was on mine.
DeFreeze and Funk.
I can't remember. Gosh, I don't even know. Anyway, so long story short.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with
me. Right. We all met freshman year of college. In the dorms, Luke was our RA, and I think Thatch and I heard Thatch playing a song that I really liked. It was a song by Foster the People, and I had been listening to it all summer. And I get to college, and all of a sudden I hear it down the hall from me in the suite, and so I go running over there, and I just
galloped.
Oh yes, you didn't see. You were in the room.
You're just here.
You had no idea how
it sounded like a truck.
And just, shamelessly, I just jump into this random dude's room and I go, dude, is that Foster the People? Are you really listening to this right now? And he's like, oh yeah, I love this band. And so we then immediately bonded over this Foster the People song that we both loved. And we started talking about them and music and
That was the initial, that's how we met.
Mm-hmm. And I kept, you guys were practicing for that, like a show on campus, what was it, the showcase or whatever? No, it was like talent show, I guess. I don't remember what you guys... No, it was talent show, right?
When we first played?
Yeah, I was hoping you guys would ask me to play with you. Because I was like, man, they're going to play. And I'm like, oh, man, I really want to... I hope they ask me to
I'm trying to remember back. But before that, we had a few times where we realized we all played.
Yeah, we jammed a little bit in the suite.
Dan misses... playing the cajon. He loves.
You don't have to mention this.
No, well, that's what we did. We
oh yeah, no, we
got close quick. We've always been but it initially came up to the talent show, and Luke and I were in choir together, and so we kind of.
Yeah,
we technically sang together before we played, but we were in choir.
And the first time we ever played, it was the talent show, like he mentioned. Mm-hmm. And you, me, and our buddy named Tom were going to do an act. It was going to be a Flight of the Conchords act.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Most Beautiful Girl.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
Most Beautiful Girl in the Room, I think it's called.
Yeah, Most Beautiful Girl, I think it's what it's called.
Yeah, whatever it is. And so we had planned this act, and we were going to do it, and then I think... And I remember coming into the suite one day, and they were like, "Dude, we're gonna do this song for the talent show.
Yeah,
and like, we want you to play drums." And I was like, "Absolutely, I'm in."
Yeah.
And so then I think we asked Luke to play the drums, and so we auditioned.
We had two drummers.
As one does.
I would actually two drummers, and I would beatbox. So we attended three drummers, which was, as Reggie Watts would say, three self-conscious minds that were one unit that would, I don't know, I'm not doing justice, but no, Luke played bass, Dan played drums.
Which Luke actually does play drums, which is
he's a good drummer.
Why I slipped up there and said that.
So you're replaceable is what I'm hearing.
No, he doesn't play drums.
Doesn't play drums like the funk plays drums.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
He doesn't play drums. No.
Reject it.
I'm Daniel Funk.
He sucks.
No. I feel like this is a Beatles situation with the, is Ringo the best drummer in the world? And then Ringo's not even the best drummer in the Beatles.
There's a great, I think it's South Park episode where they're making fun of the Beatles.
Mm.
And it's either South Park or Family Guy. And they go, Ringo goes, "Hey guys, I wrote a song." And they go, "Oh, guys, Ringo
wrote it on the
fridge." Yeah, he goes, "Ringo wrote a song." I go, "We're gonna take that song. We're gonna go put it on the fridge." That's all they do. That's so funny, dude.
Anyway, so to continue the story, we played this talent show together, and we didn't actually end up playing "Flight of the Conchords." We ended up playing "Rock with You" by Michael Jackson, which we still cover to this day.
Nice,
yeah,
and. Yeah, so it ended up just being us three, Thatcher, Luke, and myself. And I was playing drums, and Luke was playing bass.
And I was still beatboxing.
Dude, stop it.
We got booed off stage. No.
Will you quit?
But that was the first time we played together, and it went. You know, we had a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
It was well-received, and so after that, we said, let's continue to jam, and we started to write, and
And the rest is history, as they say.
As they say.
From there, it's been a blur.
Yeah. For a long answer, the partying.
I do want to say something. So Luke, even though he played with us, was kind of this was a big turning point. He was playing with a different band, totally different genre. He was a pop punk.
You slut.
Sorry,
continue.
I had never thought about it like that before.
That's so true.
No, but he was actually, you were playing with Paperweight.
Yeah, I was.
He was a pop punk. Really,
I didn't know this.
Yeah.
For a very short stint. Yeah.
It was like before they even started.
Right.
It was kind of an initial like startup. And I was kind of like, I remember Dan and I don't know how many discussions we've had over now, over like 4 or 5 years. The amount of times that we talked leading up to this point, we got to get Luke.
Because we were talking about forming the band, and we were like, we got to have Luke Hogan play the bass.
This doesn't happen unless we get Luke.
Yeah.
And we were college students, and we weren't, we didn't have any money, but we were like, let's take him out to lunch.
Nice.
And so we took him to Brahms.
Oh, yeah. The height of luxury.
No, I'm telling you, sliding door, everything.
Ooh.
No, but I remember saying, being like, Luke, you got to be in this band. Mm. And you were, I remember you were like, well, hey, I need to think about it. And then he made the choice and was like, yeah, I'm going to play with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you feel now?
Feel great. Yeah, there's the musical... work that has come out of it, and also the friendships, you know.
Yeah, just,
yeah. More than the music.
Priceless.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, what swayed you? Do you remember?
The Bronx. Yeah.
Sliding door.
I think it was
the quality dairy.
Clearly the cookies and cream.
Yeah.
Right. No, I think just the friendships that I already had with these guys, and I think I didn't know it at the time, but like I was kind of made for this style of music. I feel like just kind of what we're doing now. And,
mm-hmm.
It really was my niche, I guess, musically. I didn't know it at the time. So, yeah.
Sure.
Well, that's a good transition into the style of music. I had a brief, creepy Facebook stalker stint for you guys.
Nice.
Trying
nice.
To find how you described what you do. I found the words funky, groovy, feel good as a descriptor for your type of music. So my question is, A, tell me what that is. Unpack that for me. And B, did you guys, when you started out as like, we want to be a band, was it right off the bat you knew that was the kind of sound you wanted, or did that kind of come later?
I'll start this.
Yeah.
Take us on a journey.
Yeah,
I want to start with, I'm not an English major. I wrote that probably three years ago. What was it again? Read it again real quick.
Here we go. Funky, groovy, feel good.
Just how you said that was like really... really breathy.
Yeah.
I think it makes it better.
It's good. I liked it the second time.
Thank you.
Okay. Style-wise, let's go back to do full circle here. Lionel Richie. Luke and I were like always clicked on. I was freshman year. I was like on this huge Nile Rodgers.
Mm-hmm. You guys bonded over like 70s funk.
70s funk. And I'm actually just coming back to it and starting to listen to like some of these playlists I made years ago, because I came out of high school and I was a guitar player, and I loved, gosh, Random Access Memories. That
I was
going to
say
was huge for me, both because I loved Daft Punk like as an electronic group, but when they brought Pharrell and Nile Rodgers,
even just as a work of art,
was everything about that album was nuts, and it was, they record everything analog.
Mm-hmm.
Tape,
mm-hmm.
vintage, and it sounds, I mean, they won record of the year because the sound production was nuts. And so Nile Rodgers has always been, I've been a huge Chic fan for years, and that's what my dad played. Bee Gees, anything that like was groovy. And I mean, I can't remember a time I wasn't in my house where my dad was bumping something that was like, he always says the only album I took to college was Off the Wall. Michael Jackson, and that like encapsulates kind of our just like come back to it.
Pinnacle.
It's one, it's Quincy Jones, and it's Michael, and it's the drumming. You can attest to. I don't know who drummed on that. Do you know
Off the Wall?
Yeah,
and Daniel Funk. One of Quincy's had like a studio.
Band. He had a studio band that he had, which I know you record. I forget his name though.
We knew it once. I forgot it at this point.
Yeah, nuts. Mm-hmm. Such a good album. So we. That was like the foundation of what we listened to. And I very much write music depending on who I'm listening to at time, I would say.
Hmm.
I think John Mayer puts it well. He said like, I find myself listening to music and something will come up and I love, and I'm like, I want one of those,
mm-hmm.
And he says it's my ability not to be able to create one of those,
mm-hmm.
Or to try to sound like an artist, that you become your own.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's kind of how we started.
Mm-hmm.
And we did, literally that first talent show was Rock With You we did Lose Yourself to Dance, Rock With You, Get Lucky.
Ooh.
Was the medley.
Mm-hmm.
And it was awesome, man. And so that's kind of where it started.
Yeah, we all definitely bond over that groovy kind of
feel good.
Anything, yeah,
funky, groovy, feel good.
Oh yeah, I think we can all kind of come together on that one. But we all do all also have our own influences, which is really interesting too. Luke is more old school. Well, I would say like more old school kind of funk driven, really really groovy, really kind of poppy on the bass.
Earth, Wind, and Fire, Regine White, specifically. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. I'm more jazz based in my drumming, but which also lends itself really well to funk and more groovy kind of music as well. And then like Thatch said, it's kind of
he can be kind of a chameleon when it comes to music and writing. whatever he's listening to, he'll
let me think of this.
You know, he'll use it as inspiration. So, yeah,
nice. And so you guys said that the talent show was your first show together.
Mm-hmm. First gig.
First gig. When was your first as a band gig, as Sweet 25, original music? Do you remember?
Ooh, was that March 2016 when we played at that?
No.
It would have been Next Big Thing.
That was the first time we played our original music.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
because before it was jazz and covers and stuff like that.
2015?
Right?
No, 16.
It would have been 2016.
April, JBU's Next Big Thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was fun.
Which was a huge blessing. I mean, JBU has this, basically, JBU is John Brown University. For any listeners.
I was so lost. Thank you.
Everybody knows it.
You guys know what it is. But anybody else who doesn't, it's John Brown
University. Listeners will thank you, I'm sure.
Yes.
If you're a Christian, you know Jesus.
If you love Jesus.
We can get into that later. So JBU has this basically battle of the bands for original music. And it's for people like us, it's a really cool opportunity because it's a battle of bands for original music. So any band that has original music or any group of people that wants to form a band and write music can enter this contest. And you get up on stage and you play two or three of your original songs. And then there are some judges that give you feedback and the audience votes. And whoever wins recording time, or in our case, we want a music video. And so it was for us, it was a huge blessing because we wanted to start this band, it was, you know, perfect timing to join this competition, this Next Big Thing, if you will. And so we, auditioned pretty much right after we had, I don't even know what we auditioned with, probably one of our original songs that we had probably written a few weeks prior. And we auditioned with it and they liked it enough to let us into the competition. And so that was our first gig that we played with our original music. And throughout the year, we wrote a couple more and we performed three original songs at that competition. We performed California Groove, which you can find these ones on the album.
The first
3 years later, we're just now putting these songs out. It's California Groove, Thinking About You, and You Girl were the three songs we played at our, I guess, first gig as a band.
Well, that's cool because I just assumed that you guys had been playing long before Next Big Thing. That's where I first saw you.
Okay.
And when I...
You saw that?
I did. Yeah, I was there. I was there. I voted.
I told you. Everybody knows JBU.
That's right. Okay. Yeah.
Did you vote for us?
Yes, I did.
Beautiful. Listen, I don't...
No, the reason I'm hesitating is because I just said it before, so I'm angry at you for not being present. But I voted for you. But I thought you guys had been going a long time before that. Like, you seemed like an established group. Yeah, so that's really cool. Good. That was your first time as...
Live doing
your own songs. Mm. How did that feel to you guys? Like, because that's a big, that's not like a small, like we're in a coffee shop show. That's a lot of people, lights, three songs. Like, what was that first night like for you guys?
That's a good question.
Very high energy, just like, just shaking. I was just like bursting.
We were amped,
I think I was nervous, from a lyrical standpoint, for the first time putting music that I had written, out to some people.
Yeah.
It's a little bit intimidating. Mm-hmm. It's like, this could be a real flop. Mm-hmm. as good as you think you are, and it's just like anything. I mean, there's been times I've been working on something like, this is great, and you come back the next day and it's garbage.
Yeah.
and we worked hard, been tight.
We put a lot of time in before.
Oh, we did. Really being like, okay, we're going to do this.
Most definitely.
And that was our first show. That was nuts.
That was fun.
That was a really blur moment.
Oh, yeah.
Of being like, man. And we're, not to be be humble about this, but we're so much better now. You know what I mean? How we
were than
like,
we were then.
You go back and listen to it.
You know, yikes.
Yeah. But I mean, I was actually just today on my Spotify, and I accidentally clicked this local files tab on my Spotify, and I found a recording from Next Big Thing, actually, of California Groove, and I listened to it, and it's, I mean, I was like, I can't believe anybody, like, thought this was good. compared to what we have now, so it's cool to see the progress. But yeah, it was, to answer your question, it was very high energy. We knew we wanted to do this regardless of Next Big Thing. So mm-hmm. it wasn't like we'd put this band together for the competition, but it was like this competition was kind of the testing ground and kind of the first trial of us as a band. And mm-hmm. so obviously if things totally flopped at this competition, we would have had to really kind of assess things at that point. But
yeah, I mean,
it went well and it was well received despite what it was at the time.
Well, yeah, and it's an interesting platform for a first show because the mm-hmm. stakes for not doing well are a lot higher than just like performing for your family or something like that.
Right.
It's like, oh, well, if we mess up now, it's going to hurt a lot more than if we messed up somewhere else. But
right.
no, that's
right.
That's cool.
There was a good, there was a good crowd and it was for a first show. Yeah, it was a good, it's a good first show.
Oh, we had a blast.
Yeah.
And we didn't know what we were doing either.
We didn't.
I knew.
Oh, it was so much fun.
Mm-hmm. That was cool. That was Luke and I were, yeah, that was fun.
I can see the flashbacks in your eyes.
Really just right like, yeah. just, I'm thinking back to like, I'm trying to think. One thing about Luke, so this is, he studied engineering and was really... He was a year older than both Dan and I,
yeah.
And was constantly, always not sleeping. Like,
oh, Luke,
enough
during college. Oh my gosh,
honey, come on.
No. But I mean, he literally was.
I mean, we lived with him our
freshman year.
You could go by his room anytime, and he would not be there. Whether it was,
he was involved,
4 in the morning or 4 in the afternoon. I mean, he's,
oh, man. You made me sound terrible.
No, but he in
Luke was never there. Didn't matter when he came.
No.
We wanted to throw the ball with him, and he didn't throw. No, but he.
I don't mean it that way.
No, but there was a few times. Definitely, I remember leading up to the show. We were like, whether it was practice time or we're like, we're just not ready because we hadn't practiced enough. And regardless, it happened how it was. But I just remember that battle of trying to really coordinate was really hard. And at times I wanted to kill Luke.
Sure.
Kyle knows all about
No, there's but and it's funny now because not only have we gotten better as musicians, but we've gotten better at handling our lives. Schedules and saying no to things. And
that's a skill.
And it's really been that was something I used to have to like stress about. Like, man, are we going to be able to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Can we even meet up?
Right.
So it's been... I think I look at it like that. Like, wow, that was, getting better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you touched on it briefly, kind of reflecting from that first performance to now,
mm-hmm.
which is I'm pumped about because that's one of my questions. You mentioned them in pieces, but let's give them a little bit more light. What are some ways that you guys as a band, you can noticeably point to and say, we are so much better in this beyond just technical sound?
Dan?
Oh, I have a whole list of words.
How much time you got?
Yeah.
How long you been?
The scroll.
I was waiting for this moment.
I'll let Dan take the lead on that.
Are you thinking of the one time that we finally had to like really...
I mean, there are a lot of things we've gotten better at. But I mean, my big thing. I'm a drummer, so tempo is my huge thing. We've always been tight, and that's what I had to realize the other day. Is like, people have always said, "Oh, you guys are tight mm-hmm. as a band."
Mm-hmm.
And I listen back to our shows. And I'm like, really, we were tight back then. I mean, we sound, compared to how tight we are now. But we've always been together. We've mm-hmm. always been really in sync, and I think that's what people are getting at when they hear us and they say, "Oh, you guys are really tight." I mean, we're only three people, so
we better be tight. Yeah. Otherwise, right. What are we really doing?
Right.
There's no scent to
fill the gap.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no space there to give us any grace.
Yeah.
So, but I think, tempo is a huge thing for me. I think back to, like I said, I'm a drummer, so I listen back to our earliest recordings. And if you put a metronome to those, it would be a train wreck. And that's and that's where, when I say I listened to our early stuff and it was, a world of a difference to where it is now, that's a lot of what I'm talking about is like tempo. Mm-hmm. I listen back to it. I'm like, we had no sense of time. Even myself as a drummer, I had apparently no sense of time. And now you can, you can put a metronome to our stuff. You can, we can play our live stuff to a metronome. It's internalized too. It's not like we even necessarily need that external sense of time. It's just it's there.
So
that's a big one. I mean, for me as the drummer and as the the pulse of the band and the main driving force of the band. For me, it's huge for me to have seen the progress we've made there and in just internal sense of time.
Mm-hmm. And I think back to something that you said, Luke. I remember we have this kind of this, we don't fight really. We actually get along quite well.
Mm-hmm.
We had a tense discussion.
A gentlemanly agreement.
Yes. One night during rehearsal, where at one point I didn't like the click. I was like, I don't want to play the click.
Uh-huh.
I want to feel this. I want to be able to take the song, at any
wherever
moment.
Wherever it goes.
Yeah, I don't want to be, held to a, I don't want to be held to something that I got to,
You're like, I ain't no square.
Exactly.
You don't want to put in a box.
If I'm quoting you correctly.
Yeah. I was, it was definitely passionate. And these two guys were like, no. Click would be great.
Thatcher, you need the click.
you know what? I did. I really did.
He did, but we also did as well.
Oh, yeah, we all did. But I needed a convincing. And I remember Luke saying, listen, if we play live, obviously most people will think, hey, you're good. But you want to be playing for someone who maybe is a musician in the band and they can look at it and say, man, their time is on.
Mm. Yes.
And I remember you saying that and I was that's a good point. But I didn't say that to him out loud. But we had to, with the band, you have to compromise and pull each way. And we started playing the click in practice. It started with just practice. And then now we play. It's nice to have a metric. I love it now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's just a nice, there it is,
Yeah. Right.
And for me at this point, I'm like, we can play with it or without it. I don't really care because our internal sense of time is there no matter what because we practice with it because it's internalized at this point.
Yeah.
So that was a big, big change, especially as a three piece, because we basically are the fundamentals of most music, bass, guitar, drums, vocals. Yeah.
Hmm.
And so you're kind of exposed.
Mm-hmm.
It's an exposed thing, and it's not easy to do. Three piece is not, I would say, to pull it off is, and we're trying to get better at it. But we love the Police, and the reason the Police were so good is they were a three piece, and the sound they put out was unreal,
and the simplicity with it.
But it was also there's three guys up there. Most bands today are 7, 8,
five,
five and up,
five
basically.
Minimum,
you have core four, and then like the rotating
five people, and one guy's playing synth or playing some drum pad. Or
so the simplicity of three is amazing. I mean, in so many reasons, it's great. But when you get on stage, you realize to fill the space and to really put out the sound you want to put out. It's tough with three people.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So it pushes each of us in
definitely
in a lot of ways.
I would say, I guess my big, I used to, when I came into school, and I knew a lot of different really good guitar players, and they all had, one thing I was like a purist with coffee, I don't drink with any cream.
Mm.
I was very much not into any pedals. You remember this? No pedals, no effects.
No pedals.
Straight into the amp, raw, and I had all these friends that had these massive pedal boards.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, dude,
Chipper Vine.
Those tone killers. You know, it's like, it's totally, and then now I'm totally, through years of really research and finally finding my own tone, I mean, I got a massive, not massive, but very much.
He's got an actual pedal board.
I have a pedal board, and I have some distinct sounds that really are on the album you'll hear, and you know, try to find your original tone. And it was to fill space.
Yeah.
Because when you're up there, depending on the song, you're like, this is really dry.
Mm-hmm.
There's not really much going on. And so that's really been big as far as improvement, I guess, to sound and creativity.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, learning to fill space. I think, too, just learning. I mean, we all love to get in the room and just jam on something and mm-hmm. just play whatever we want. So I think a point of improvement or a point of, I guess, progression for us has been learning when to play stuff and when not to play stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Learning what to play and what not to play.
Yeah.
You know, you listen to some of the best, you know, musicians in the world, and they'll tell you it's not always being able to play something, but it's being able to play it and knowing when to play it and when not to play it.
It's not
always about what you play, but it's also about what you don't play.
Mm-hmm.
Nile Rodgers was never give the audience too much information.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah. Every especially guitar players. Because every guitar player, and I know some really good ones. We all do. Mm-hmm. But every guitar player has about 4 to 5 tricks
mm-hmm.
that are money spots for them. Now you typically want to play about 2 of those in a show, because otherwise, if you're playing this, you know, it's like, you know, unless you're, you know, Hendrix or you know, I would give it to Mayer. I think Mayer can play really well to where then I've heard, you know, heard him interviewed about it. He's like, yeah, I mean, I have a handful of tricks and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But I mean, that's the reality of to be a musician, you have limitations. But with those, you harness what you have.
Yeah.
Which is big. And Luke just
it's just slapping that bass away. Slapping the bass.
It's getting better as a musician, but also getting better in your sense of what's tasteful
and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's especially as a drummer.
Oh yeah.
Because you can go nuts.
I'm huge in that is tasteful drumming, you know.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
because you can doesn't mean you should.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tasteful drumming, taste of funk.
Yeah, no, it's like a we always get back to that Ocean's video.
Yeah, the drummer.
Just the wrong beat for the wrong song.
Call me out among the
just
because you can shred doesn't mean you should shred.
Yeah,
yeah, it's self control.
I know that.
Good point, Dan. I'm trying to think what else improvement-wise. Luke?
I think as people, too, I mean, we are we're all Christians, and that's really important to us, our relationship with Christ. And I think that that's been... My voice is cracking all over the place.
He's getting emotional. I'm talking about it.
That was the Holy Spirit. That was beautiful.
Holy Spirit's humbling Luke right now. So.
No, but talk about me more.
You know, that's...
It's not about you.
So that is pretty fundamental to our lives, and I think being able to sharpen each other in that way has been pretty cool too. So
nice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, and I think we're all believers in the fact that every part of your life is connected. So you know, if you're slacking off in one part of your life, or you know, you're really struggling in one part, it's going to have effects on the other parts. Or you know, you're really making progress and you know, pushing yourself in one part of your life, it's gonna affect the other parts of your life. So it's, you know, as we want to better each other as musicians and as bandmates, we also want to, you know, better each other and sharpen each other as men as well, because we believe that that's going to have an effect on the band and the music we're creating.
And just the image overall. Mm-hmm. You know, what is it about? That's important for us.
Well, great answer, gentlemen. I see that your waters are empty, and so I think it's a great time for us to take a little break, get you guys hydrated. Cool. So while we're gone, giving these men some H2O, if you will, Noah. Will you?
I will, thank you.
Bless you. Why don't you, audience, listen to Coolest Kid in Town from Sweet 20... Oh, I forgot the number. 25, right?
You invited us here, man.
I thought I mixed it with 21 Springs. Is it 28 Springs? What are numbers?
All the 20s, man. Just
were the, getting sort of mixed up. Were the other 24 suites taken?
Yeah. The band, Daniel
one won. By one. Yeah.
Forgive me, gentlemen, for totally butchering that. Enjoy the song, Slander. Audience. We'll be right back in a little bit. Guys, we just listened to Coolest Kid in Town. So we got to talk about your first experience, you know, playing as a group, tons of people, lights, all that stuff. Now, you know, having recently released an album, what was the whole, how did that feel? Just take it whatever direction you want. But I, again, being a non-music person, I can go, oh, I'm sure it's lots of work. But I, beyond that, I really have no concept of what goes into it, mm-hmm. how it feels, all the different steps. So for you, it's probably all news. But in case that we got ignorant people like us, paint a picture. A
couple humming fools.
That's right. Ugh.
Yeah, Trent's having a little snack, doing a little ASMR.
I'm eating some chocolate. Okay? Just lost hundreds of listeners.
Yeah.
We don't have that many.
No.
Oh, brother.
Okay. You want to chew some ice, Funk?
Oh, I've got some. Here we go.
All right.
We got ice water. Look, peasant over here. I'm just kidding. I'm drinking Onyx coffee. It's great.
Shut up.
Are we talking?
We are not sponsored by Onyx.
But we could be. Yeah. We are open to it.
Please, please sponsor us.
Please, God.
What was the question?
Album experience.
Yeah, I think it feels interesting because, you know, as we kind of said, it's a culmination of 2.5 years or so of work put into the songs. And then, as Dan mentioned, the songs now are different, I guess, in their texture, and the arrangements are a little bit different. And I think, yeah, our abilities have definitely improved over the years of practice and performing and stuff like that. So it's cool to see that, you know, it almost, we needed the 2 years, I guess, to make the album, because we wouldn't have been ready to make it, you know, when we just started, or even a year after we started. So it's been a long time in the making, but I think that the time really helped it get where it needed to be. And just the inspiration that came in that time too, and that just, Dan spent a semester away and he was influenced, you know, by some Spanish music too. And we've written some stuff for our upcoming album, or what music is to come in the future. We've got some Spanish influence there. So anyway, it's just cool to think about the times that we had together and apart over those 2.5 years.
Yeah,
really
I would say
made the album, you know, what it needed to be.
To describe the whole album, it's been a journey.
Yeah. You
know, if I can encompass the album in one word, it's been a journey, because and that's what the title Floors is kind of getting at. It's been almost tons of separate floors, tons of separate stages of a journey, because some of these songs, I mean, you know, You Girl, California Groove, Thinking About You, we played those songs at Next Big Thing 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. We wrote them prior to that event, and so those were our first songs that we ever wrote. And Floors, I mean, we finished, you know, yeah, I mean, we finished right before we put the album out. I mean, literally right before we put it out. So it's, I mean, the album literally spans 3 years of our musical journey.
Right.
It's not, I mean, I think when I look at a lot of albums, it seems like you listen to an album from your favorite artist, and it's almost like a snapshot of their musical, especially the really dynamic artists.
Yeah.
You know, artists that really stand the test of time. And the ones that really, you know, that last, you compare their albums over time and they seem like snapshots.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and I don't know, you know, where we'll be in 10 years, that it might seem like a snapshot. But at this point, this album seems like a journey, because it's been, like I said, it's been written and made over the course of 3 years. And like Luke was saying, if we had, I mean, one of the songs we finished right before putting the album out, and the other songs we had, I guess, technically finished years ago, but honestly, if we tried to record those songs, and we did try to record them. If we had put the album out, or if we had tried to do the album or an EP or whatever we tried to do 2 or 3 years ago, it would have been garbage.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't have been at all what it is now. Because even just this last, we were always in the studio over the course of the years, and we just never got the product we wanted until this last time in the studio, and we finally felt like we were ready to do the album.
Yeah. Right.
And that's what was big for me with this album was with our initial songs, this last time in the studio, I could finally say, all right, I'm ready to play this song. Right. I can actually pull this song off, because I look back to the previous recordings that we'd done over some of our earlier songs, and I mean, personally, I just couldn't pull them off.
The skills didn't match the ambition of the
That's a really good point, Noah. Yeah, the skill didn't match the ambition for what I felt like the song needed. You know, I wasn't ready to do. And at this point I could finally do that. And so that felt, you know, that was really cool.
Yeah. I kind of finally being able
to do the songs justice, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of brings up a question for me, I guess, a kind of a two-parter. The first part is, I think, something that any artist that creates anything can relate to, but at what point do you decide, oh yeah, this is good enough? Let's release it. And the second part is, Is there a point where you've spent too much time on something to where you go back to the first stages of that thing and you're like, now we have to go back and redo stuff?
Yeah.
So anyway, you guys can answer that however you want. But.
Yeah, no, I'll talk about that for a second. I love the recording process. Always have. I've had a little home studio we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Forever. My brother and I got into recording when I was younger. We used to do like parody music videos and stuff. And just the whole process was fascinating to be like in the studio. You know, mm-hmm. It was just so cool. And
why do you think we're doing this?
Yeah. But I will tell you, the last 6 months, I've spent too much time in the studio to where it's very much, I want to play live. You know, yeah. I don't, and we're learning, for sure.
Yes.
I've been in three different studios in my lifetime that like actually put out records. It was Stone Ridge Recording, mm-hmm. in Siloam, Haxton Road, and then the one that we did this album on,
Studio 109.
Studio 109, which is actually on campus at GBU.
Oh, okay.
Which I want to shoot a shout out to Cameron Lambert, who was our audio engineer, did a great job.
Cameron James Audio.
It came down to like we were talking about, is we recorded, I mean, these original songs, we recorded a couple times, and we just really, and even because we went into the studio in March, in the spring. And
To give you some context, we were hoping to put this album out years ago. We've been trying to do this album for years, and now we finally got it done. We're thankful that we didn't really put it out until now.
For the reasons that I just described.
Exactly. Yeah.
We went to the studio in March, and we had, you know, the original songs, which are the first, we call them Floor 1 and Floor 2. So Floor 1 is California Groove, Thinking About You, You Girl, and Coffee. And those were all very much supposed to be recorded like live. Mm-hmm. Very live, raw, mm-hmm. three-piece.
Yeah.
Now, when Dan went to Spain, I started writing some different styles of music, a little bit more, I would say, like Night Drive-y kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit more lower key, I guess.
Yeah, actually.
So when we went into the studio with Cameron in March, I sat down with him over coffee and I said, not the song, just actual coffee. But we sat down and I was real with him. And Cameron had mixed this before live, and we'd been friends for years. We actually have the same birthday, which is kind of cool. The conversation was, hey, you know, what's the, you know, as an audio engineer, you want to come with a fresh take. You want to come in there and you want to take a band, for example, and take them to a different level, mm-hmm. of one, maybe what they're not necessarily thinking. And I know we listen to Coolest Kid, so the actual guitar rhythm part was not even part of the record. That was actually Cameron played that. And it was, I remember it was a late night and we were recording in March and he just started that and I was losing my mind. They can attest. I lost. It's just that moment where you kind of like, it's just like, what? Like that's what it was missing.
Yeah.
It made the pulse of the song for sure.
And somebody who's on your team, you know, so to speak, who can hear what you're putting out. And not come in and try to change it so much as, what if you threw this other ingredient in?
What do you think about this?
Exactly.
Yeah. And Cameron was great. Like, hey, listen, I'm thinking about this. What do you think?
Mm.
And I loved it. But to answer your question directly, so we recorded the first half. We recorded the whole album very much in what more modern day music is, very spliced. So very much Dan's in a drum room by himself. We did vocals later. Mm-hmm. Guitar was recorded very dry. All the processing was done after, which is most popular music you listen to today.
Yeah.
And the second half of the album was great that way, mm-hmm. because it was supposed to be that way.
Mm-hmm. It's how it was written.
It was how it was written, very much, very heavily processed. And we got the first half of the album back and it was not And then we kind of were discouraged a little bit because it's like, here we go again. We cannot record these songs. Mm-hmm. What is the deal? Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of a tough decision, but we came in, this was now August, you know, a few months ago. And I think I was like, we gotta go back in. We gotta
do it live.
The original songs.
We'll do it live.
No, but we did. We did it in the live room. We did it on tape, and we did it very much how it was written.
Yeah, that's what the songs were written to be.
And it was finally live, like, yeah. Even in the playback sessions that day, I think when we were overdubbing both bass and guitar, just in our playback headphones, we're like, it already sounds great.
Yeah.
You know, and Cameron was, you know, when I came to him and I was like, we got to go back, you know, and I was expecting great. You know, like,
yeah,
here we go again. Mm-hmm. You know, because we're tough. We're not like, you know, we've played these songs so much that we're very critical of them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And when I came to him and talked to him about it, he was like, great. He goes, I wanted to do that originally. And I don't know if I told you guys that, but he was like, dude, that's how I love doing live tracking. He goes, that's how I want to do most of my stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we finally came in and we laid it down. In 2 days, two or three day session of just live. I think we did a little Facebook live on that. And it was from there. It was finally like, okay. Now in the last couple of weeks before we put the album out, we came in for a playback session, and as musicians, it's never going to be good enough.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It's like an art piece. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not. It's like, oh man, I could totally. Add and add. You can sit there and tweak all day, which we did.
Yeah.
And we had to kind of come back and say, okay, listen, it's done.
Mm-hmm.
You got to let it be.
Oh. Yeah. How you played it is how it's going to be.
Out,
especially with the live recording.
Oh, yeah.
And that was hard for me is, you know, I wanted to change all these things, but it was like, well, you know, with live recording, it's like you're trying to capture what you did live. And so what you did live is what's going to come out on the record. And I think, yeah, to get to one of your questions, Noah, you know, how do you know where to stop when perfecting it? Or how do you know when it's good enough? That's been one of my biggest struggles.
Yeah.
Because I think we get it to a certain point, and then I see, once we get to a certain point, I see where it could be at the next level. And so once it gets here, then I get this vision and this ambition for what it could be.
Yeah, every
and
time then, there's another step.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And then where it is currently isn't good enough because I can see it at that next level. And to an extent, that's a cool thing in a lot of ways. But,
yeah.
You know, when you're trying to put an album out and trying to just do these original songs that you wrote 3 years ago justice, it's kind of like, all right, let's just, you know, let's play them and let's then just kind of...
Well, and that's what the live shows are for afterwards, is you can kind of mix it up and, like, as you get better.
Change arrangements.
Oh, yeah.
Arrangements and keys.
Yeah.
Right. And there's stuff that we do. There's stuff that we do with these songs that we only do live, you know, that you won't hear on the album. Mm-hmm. And so that's, like you said, that's a really cool thing that we can say, all right, well, if it didn't come out on the album, then it's a thing that we do live.
Yeah.
It's a thing that, you know, just a live audience gets to experience. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. And that's the point I think any musician wants to do. You go to a show, you know, why would you go to a show if you can just listen to the record at home, right? It's the experience.
Oh, yeah.
It's something new, something that catches you off guard. You know, you go see U2.
Yeah.
You listen to U2 records. We love U2. Mm-hmm. And they're good. I mean, they've got some great songs, but their studio stuff does not even encapsulate what they are.
Yeah.
And then you see them, and you're like, no way.
Mm-hmm.
Are they that good?
Yeah.
You know, and my not to just keep doing it on YouTube, but what blew me away when I saw him for the first time was I saw him in Louisville, and it was on their 2017 Joshua Tree tour, and One Republic opened for him, and they rocked it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they came out, and it was like...
They're pretty good live, yeah.
Oh, nuts.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God, they're younger, and the doubts fill my head, and I'm with Tucker Gamble, who's an old roommate of mine, huge YouTube fan. And he goes, dude, just wait. and no lie, Larry Mullen Jr. came out and he's opened up with Sunny Bloody Sunday, and I about crapped my pants.
I feel like they have to open with that.
Oh, so, yeah. I mean, but it was just like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
And they're like 60. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, and that's why people
go to see them.
Go see them 100 times because they're so good.
Yeah. Or like John Mayer will have every song that he plays live will have a 10-minute guitar solo with it.
Right. Yeah. It's like, gotta go see him live. But yeah, to get back on track, so the album was very much a process. It's a humbling experience. As musicians, recording is a humbling experience. Oh, yeah. You see, as a vocalist, you see every flaw and how you're really not that good. Let's be honest. You got to go back and track and track and track to get the best take. And then, you know, sometimes even then you got to fix some stuff. And it's like, you know, but you want to, you know, want to capture it. You want it to be raw. But, you know, sometimes you just, you know, that's what it is. And that's what makes it art. Because it's not perfect. And that's what something I had to tell Dan. Because Dan, I mean, you were having a hard time. After our last playback session, I was like.
Oh, yeah. I'm very, I mean, admittedly, I'm very perfectionistic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and with the things I know. I mean, drums, like, the drums will never be, they'll never sound good enough for me. Because,
he literally was like.
I know what I want them to sound like, and And like I was telling you, I always wanted to be at that next level. And so, for stuff that I know, whether it's, you know, tempo or the sound of my drums. Or,
tuning, like for me, it would be like a tuning, like even, he's so minute, like detail of like just the tuning of a snare. He's like, it should be a little bit lower. Where I'm like, it sounds good, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's like, it's a snare. It's, if it was a guitar or something where it's more present, then you're going to be like, you know.
Well, and these guys, will after every song, they've got to grab their tuners and retune. Like, and they're like, oh, are you out of tune? No, I'm out of tune. No, I think it's you out of tune. No, it's me out of tune. And I'm like, wow, you guys, I don't notice that stuff.
So, I mean, it's Dan's snare. It's out of tune.
And I think you notice the things about your own voice or your own instrument that are, you know, like I keep listening to my voice and I'm like, oh man, like I wish it was better. And everyone else is like, I think it's okay, man. I think, you know, you just really be cool with it. You know, I'm like, okay, you know, the people are.
Oh, even times I've had it, like, dude, the harmonies are great.
And you're always the most critical of yourself. No, and that's the thing I've seen, you know, in these guys, and then kind of had that revelation in my own mind, like, wow, I really am super critical of my own part.
Your own craft. And, and so to in the that question is, when the album was done, and this is weeks ago.
This is
2 weeks ago. And it was like, all right, that's it. We are not touching it. It is done. You know, it's good. And then we had a couple, and I spent like total time leading up to finishing the mastering. I don't know how many hours I spent in the studio, but it was a little too much. And I finally had a like 4 day break where I didn't listen to any of the songs. And then I finally, when it dropped, had my little time to sit there and listen to it right through. And it was, I was like, all right, it's good.
Yeah,
that's great.
I'm pleased with it. But for us, it's kind of, we're ready to, it's like a stepping stone. Like Dan said, we're ready to go to the next, you know, play these songs live and continue to write and really. Floors, we love. We've come. I think Floors is probably it's my favorite song on the album. It's so fresh.
Because that was the one that we wrote most. That I was saying we wrote
together
right as we were putting the album out. It was the most recent song. Yeah. That song. We have yet to play it live. So I think we can all say if we're gonna listen to one song and actually enjoy it, it's gonna be that one because it's so fresh. Yeah. The rest of them, it's like, all right, we're happy with it, but like, we've played them so many times live.
You can't be objective about them anymore. It's just like sound.
You hear it and you feel like you're playing it. And so it's not the same.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah. It's for our audience. It is not for us. You know, and as much as it is for us, right? It's our work.
Sure.
But we want to share it because we've had it so long. Yeah. That's why you do an album.
Yeah.
It's like, here you go.
Yeah.
And it's been a cool experience to hear from people that just recently, like random people. I've gotten texts from, you know, people that even haven't seen us live, and some that have, and they're like, oh, you finally released that song that you played live. And it's great, you know? And so it's like, I'm glad. I'm great. But we always get, I mean, even playing live, and you guys are there on the show on Saturday. When you try to do as much justice as you can on the record live, it's a rewarding feeling where we can look at each other and go, that was pretty good. You know? So that,
that was a good, great, thorough answer. And it's funny cause we were just talking about, the song Floors right before you guys got here and
saying, tasty.
Yeah. How good of a, how good of a closer track is. And now that like, after what you guys have said, I was like, I was just thinking it makes so much sense that it sounds a little bit different from the other songs. But it's a good, like great place for it to be on the track list. And so,
I mean, not to reiterate too much what I've been saying, but that was the last song we wrote.
Right.
But we knew before even starting that song that had to be the album song. You know, the song almost went somewhere completely different. But at some point we said, oh, we need to have an album song. We need to have, why don't we call this one Floors and make it,
try to write it
and make it the song, you know, a song that encapsulates the album, a song that describes the journey of this album. And so that's what we went into the song with, the vision that we went into it with. We want it to be a song that describes this process and this journey of ours and making this album. And you definitely hear that in, you know, the story of the song and everything.
Because it's got and that was the funny thing is, I wrote the music for it this last summer, the year, since like over a year ago. I wrote it on the guitar and it was a loop. And
we had the tune for it.
I had the tune. I was like, this is really kind of cool. And usually I'm pretty, depending on, I start with a piece of music and then write lyrics. That's my process of writing. And I really struggled with that song. Could not write it. It was supposed to be a love song. Slow jam, love song, you know, probably for my girlfriend, you know, at the time, probably when I was writing it, you know, in just kind of this, but I couldn't write it. And I think Dan for months was like, you got any lyrics on that song? you remember that. And I was like,
yeah.
But it was nothing that it was worth. Hey, listen to this. What do you think of this?
Yeah.
And then it finally came down, and that's what's been so cool about it is we had to literally the morning of the session to go in, we had to finish the song.
Oh, wow.
We had a time crunch, but we all sat down at the table in the morning and we wrote it together. That was the first song I think lyrically we wrote together.
Right.
Which has been cool.
Yeah,
that's why it's like, whoa.
And every song to an extent is a collaboration, but that one was we have one day. Yeah. We have to write this song together. You know, every other song it's kinda like, hey, let's jam on this, see where it goes. You know, someone will write some lyrics, someone will write a hook or whatever. But that song was like, all right, we have this amount of time and we've got to write it. So what's the line here? What's the line here? Yeah. You know, what's the map of it going
to
look
like? What's the story? Yeah. What are we saying?
Yeah.
What do we want to say in this? And then it really came to fruition, in the studio when we started writing it and being like, really laying it down.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh wow. Okay. And then finally, when you listen to it back, for me, it was pretty emotional. I was like, whoa. It's a cool song.
I think it's hitting us now.
Yeah.
As we're listening to it now, because we finished it and then just
let it go.
And just let it go. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, oh, what actually happened to that song? Like, let's listen to it. I want to.
Cameron and I mixed. We finally got done with all the other songs, mixing. And then it was like, okay, let's look at Floors. And I was like, gosh, we haven't looked at Floors since we recorded it. And then seeing it come together was like, oh, wow. Okay. That's going to be the song.
So every other song, it's kind of like we put it out and it's like sharing it with everybody else. But this song, it's kind of like we put it out and it's like almost like, you know, we're almost sharing it with ourselves.
Because
we don't even hardly know what it is. So.
So that's been cool for Floors.
You guys have said so much delicious stuff that my brain's just been overloaded because it's like, oh, that, I want to talk about that. Crap, nope, we're done with that. All right, we're on here. This is tasty too. Crap, it's gone. Toy with it. All right. I have two main things that I want to address that you guys just talked about. Okay. Again, Noah, great question.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I affirmed you and I'll critique you later.
Yeah.
But... No, I want to come back to Floors, but just in going in the order of how the conversation went. I love what you guys said about the struggle of, you know, when to put out the album and when it was finished. And again, I'm glad you asked that. And that's why I love this podcast, because it's so cool to see the connection that artists share, even though the medium may be different. Because while you were talking about that, I was like, oh my gosh, like, yes, like we've talked about this so much in our work. But it's really cool. Not that I, you know, wish, you know, harm on you guys, but to see that struggle in you as well, and to see how it manifests a little bit differently. I know when I was trying to release my book, I just kept ordering proofs, kept ordering them, and kept finding something wrong, kept finding something else wrong. And I just was so angry. Yeah, driving me crazy. And I had like a melt. It was kind of, if it was in a movie, it'd be funny. But for me, it was tragic. But I had like a day where
I'm losing it. Yeah.
I was going to a brand new like small group. And so I was supposed to like make something. And that was the day that I was getting my proof as well. And so I have like, I think it was cornbread or something baking in the oven. I got my proof. I'm like, awesome. And I like open it and then it's wrong. And then my cornbread like lights on fire. And I just like sat down and like wept. I was like, no, I don't want to do this anymore. But that's like how emotional and how much you get in your head. And eventually I kind of had to come to what you guys said, which I was like, you know what? No matter what I do, there will be something wrong with this. There's a different, you know, degree of technical wrong or like, you know, whatever.
Just how your gut, how it feels about it.
But eventually you kind of have to put it out there. So that was really cool. Interesting to hear about how you guys kind of worked through that.
I mean, I can like Dash said earlier with my, you know, perfectionism, I can relate to the cornbread's on fire.
Yes.
That's real.
That's a great story.
Though. And Dan's tough. I'm serious. Like I tell him, like it's expected to be critiqued. Like there's something that will be, it's not usually like, he's not going to come and go, your guitar, man, just really, it's his product. He knows his product well.
Yeah. It's usually my drums.
Yeah. So it's kind of like where I'm like, dude, step back.
But at the same time, there's something admirable about it too. Right? It's like, yeah. I look at Dan, I was like, man, I need to care more about being as good as I can possibly be. You know what I mean? And Dan definitely has that. Is geared that way. So it's like, I need to be more like that to a degree, right? You know, and be, trying to hone my craft, I guess.
Well, yeah, and it's funny because the way you guys, kind of your dynamic is similar with us, where you kind of have to act as the audience for that person because they can't step away from it.
Yeah.
And you have that perspective. Yeah. And so it's like, I'll be drawing something and then I'll be like, I this doesn't work. And then Kyle will be like, oh no, this is fine. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to touch it anymore. Right. Or I'll look past a certain thing and focus on a detail. And he'll be like, well, this looks kind of strange. And then I'll pull back and be like, oh, you're right. It does. And then same thing with when we flip it around with the writing and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it's really nice. And we've talked
about true collaboration.
Yeah. We've talked about collaboration so much, that's like the main, advantage of it is just that perspective from other people. So
and anybody what I've looked at is anybody that's good that we look, especially in music, they have a great band.
Yeah.
John Mayer, for example, has one of the greatest, I mean, Pino Palladino, just his three piece, and Steve Jordan on the drums.
Yep.
And then many others that play with him. I mean, it's like, and he himself knows that. He knows I've got the best band. Mm-hmm. You know, Frank Sinatra, yeah. Quincy Jones was his band leader.
Mm.
Okay. The reason his arrangements were so good, you got Quincy Jones doing, you know, it's like, it's a collaboration. Everything that's been really good is typically teamwork.
Oh, yeah.
Anything. And that's, I think it's how God designed it. I think we're supposed to work together.
Yeah.
Just like the relationship, you know, with individuals, with God, it's a, you know, you can't do it alone. And that's what you need. You need encouragement. You need criticism. You need motivation to try to work harder. You know, it's especially as an artist too, because, you know, I can say there's a lot of things that I'm insecure about. You know, I can get up on stage and look like I'm, you know, I mean, he's got it all together. But there's very inside. I mean, it's like, man, I really don't think that sounded. You know what I mean? Yeah, you have a way that you have to let go and say, no. Mm-hmm. That's you.
Yeah.
And you have to be at peace with that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of artists aren't. And that's why you see a lot of trouble with a lot of, you know, people that are put in the spotlight because they can't. Mm-hmm. they know they're not as good as people think they are. Mm-hmm. And so having that perspective and trying to, you know, keep that perspective just as a person, you know, I want to be honest with myself and not, you know, try to be something I'm not.
Yeah.
Which mm-hmm. is huge. So, yeah. But anyway, it's a tangent.
Again, no, it was great. Freaking yummy. You got to stop it. I'll continue to use these types of words. They're my favorite adjectives.
Freaking yummy.
Food tasty, related. Yeah.
Tasty. Yeah, delicious.
I feel like delicious.
Funky, delicious and tasty are the top ones.
Yeah.
Just to go back to when you guys were talking about floors, again, just in agreement, like I Noah and I were talking about before, and I was really enjoying the whole album. I kind of like, but it was kind of what I was expecting from you guys, just like that really fun, you know, mm-hmm. kind of lighter. And then when that song came on, it really was like the perfect ending to the album. And when you said, as soon as you said Journey, I was like, yeah, like it felt that way.
Yeah.
And it was still a fun, like great song, but it had a little bit of a bittersweetness to it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what a great send off. And I liked all of them. I was like, oh, I'd put like most of these in like a funk playlist or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was the one where I was like, favorite instantly. Like, this is so good. Yeah. I want it. And that's an encouraging thing. I told Noah too. I was like, you know, I probably should have listened to their music before I agreed to have them on, because that's awkward.
Like,
what if what if they suck and then you're like talking the whole time and like you're like, oh, when we try to make good music, it's like, well, you're trying. It's not actually good.
Good luck with that.
So it really is a pleasure though to interview people that you respect and whose stuff you're like, oh, like this is good.
Yeah, cool.
So it's cool hearing, especially because my favorite song off the album that. Kind of the story all about.
It's cool to hear.
About it. So,
yeah.
Guys, we don't have much time left. I wish we had more. I could sit in this somewhat hot room with you for a couple more hours.
It's heating up.
I had that cup of coffee in my. I've been sweating.
Yeah. I was wearing a blanket earlier and I'm not anymore.
Yeah.
No more blanket. But we have one final segment that we like to do. It's called Rapid Fire, and where we just ask some quick questions.
Ooh.
You don't think about it. Just say what comes to mind. If you take too long, I will move on. And you don't have to feel bad, but that's the name of the game, Funk.
Okay.
So,
are you starting it in order?
I'm going to start with you, and you're each going to get three questions. So, again, as quickly as possible, don't think about it too much. Are you ready, gentlemen?
Yes, sir.
This is a speed round.
Okay.
Gosh, I hope it's.
That's your favorite car song.
Cold Blooded Gary Clark Jr.
Ooh,
fantastic. Nice. Luke, polar bear versus grizzly bear, go.
Grizzly bear, based on Dwight Schrute's research.
Fantastic. Daniel Funk, Dolly Parton in a cage mask versus Stevie Wonder, who would win?
Stevie Wonder, probably because his other senses are heightened.
He's got that blind strength.
He's blind, so you underestimate him.
Yeah.
But clearly, I mean, he's got some other powers, other tricks under his belt.
Yeah. Fantastic answer. Thatcher, on a scale of 1 to 10, how attractive is Elton John?
Ooh, 9.
Fantastic.
Wait.
Oh.
Clarify there. Decade 70s, I'd give him a 9.
Mm. Nice.
He's kind of tapered off. Moving on.
Just age of time. Yep. Nope. Good answer. Earth, Wind, and Fire or the Bee Gees?
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
All right.
I disagree. But that's why the fusion's there, man.
Yeah.
That is such a good
collaboration.
Yeah.
Triangle or cowbell?
Oh, triangle all the way. Cowbell is cliche, overrated. Yeah. I mean, the triangle is there, but you don't know it's there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take it out, you don't have the song anymore.
It's like when the job's done right, you won't know that it's, yeah.
Man, I'm glad we got that recorded.
I'm putting that on a poster. I love that.
Oh, man.
That was really good,
Dan. Thatcher, if you had to write a song about Noah, what would you call it?
Clean.
Ooh.
You are wrong.
Can you? Ooh, Noah, please. Can you add baguette at the end of it? Clean baguette.
Mm. All
right. Why do people keep leaving me?
Because whenever you're with someone this creative, artistic, whose mind is, I don't know, as deep and expansive, who can keep up?
Yeah. I like it. I'm going to tell myself that tonight.
Okay. Both expansive and expensive.
It's not cheap.
Yeah.
Finally, Daniel Funk. If you had to write a song about Noah and I, Humming Fools, what would you call it?
Mm. Man.
This isn't
cinnamon
feeling...
Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Oh!
All the way.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch?
Is that because I just
all the way,
it
or
the
is it just Cinnamon Toast Crunch?
Oh, sorry, just Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
I kind of like Cinnamon Toast Crunch all the way.
Parentheses nice. All the way. We can talk about the parentheses.
Yeah.
I'm open to that.
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
There's a discussion there.
Gentlemen, you nailed the rapid fire. Thank you so much for coming in and hanging out with us tonight. If people want to hang out with you more in their ear holes, how can they do so? Where should they find you? Where should they go? Plug everything you want.
We're, well, music-wise, whoa.
Just getting emotional.
Was that the Holy Spirit as well, or was that just
you? I'm getting emotional.
Stay humble.
Yeah.
Don't forget about me.
You can find us.
That's okay. Demon voice.
No, you can find us on YouTube. It's Sweet 25, and we're on Apple Music, Spotify, Tidal. Deezer.
Yeah.
We are on all streaming networks, and we'll be
Napster.
You can come see us. Let's see, you can come see us live next Thursday at 28 Springs, Silent Springs.
Nice.
We're gonna be jamming out at 7 o'clock. That'd be one way to see us live, and then we'll be. I'm trying to think, we've got a couple more gigs coming up.
Well, when people listen to this, it'll be the Thursday coming after, it'll be next Tuesday. So
awesome.
When you're hearing this, 2 days.
Oh yeah.
The 18th.
Cool. Boom.
There we go. 18th of October. You can come see us live. Other than that.
And do you want anyone to go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, like, can people follow you anywhere in terms of events and news?
In person, online.
Find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
Like, what's Instagram? The Sweet 25 band?
Yeah, the Sweet 25 band on Instagram.
Mm.
Yeah, that's usually where we're, you know, updating about shows.
The most active.
Shows, and then our website
the
is sweet25.net. Okay. So that's where we're going to hopefully get the album out and get some hard copies and some merch coming your way pretty soon. We're definitely musicians and not marketers.
Yeah.
We're working on it. We're trying to build a team right now and learning a lot.
Fantastic. And all of that will be in the show notes in case anyone's lazy and doesn't want to type it in. You can just go them and click the link. So, Noah, thank you as always for joining me. I will now refer to you as the Clean Baguette. Where can people find you online? Please take this seriously.
I can't. Instagram is going to be the main spot as usual. Noah Bosley is my name.
Fantastic. And for me, it's Kyle_the_Ecuadorian. Sweet 25, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you all have a tasty, delicious, yummy, scrumptious evening.
Kyle, Noah,
thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.